Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9 here at MVP Summit 2015, Building 33. I'm here with the honorable.
Nothing honorable.
Glenn Block, who you seem to be missing. I feel like we're missing...
It's Movember.
What does that mean? It's like you grow your beard the whole month, is that it?
Yeah, you try to grow your mustache, but it's you basically shave, start clean shaven, and the idea is you're doing this to raise awareness for men's health and fundraising for men's health, like prostate cancer and other kinds of things, general awareness. So I actually do have a page.
Oh.
So if you go to Movember, you can search for a team. My team is Splunk Stash.
Okay.
STACHE.
CHE.
And you may support my noble, tiring effort of shaving.
You literally don't shave the
whole
month.
You know, this was kind of painful because my daughter looked at me right after I came out of the bathroom and she was like, thumbs down.
Not liking the, not digging this. So you're an MVP, dude. What are you an MVP in?
.net.
What does that mean?
Well, they've recently restructured the whole program. Mm-hmm. Actually, one thing that's nice is you can now actually be an MVP in multiple categories.
Sure.
So I might end up being an MVP in Azure as well.
Okay.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But it is pretty vast now. Like, it's a tool, there's a, like, I think they have it all under like Visual Studio languages kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Development languages, development tools. I'm not exactly how it, but it's what's nice is it is much more encompassing now.
Uh-huh.
So going, although currently I'm .NET, in the new world, which is coming in April for me, assuming I get reinstated, I will be a kind of languages, all up, tools, which is great because I'm very polyglot. I do a lot of development in Node, Python, you know, whatever, and of course, a good amount of
course.
C#.
So let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now and how sort of your polyglotness has helped. I just made up a word for you.
It might be a real word.
Well, it is for this video.
You should look it up.
Yeah.
It's been coined right here.
Yeah, heard here, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, it certainly helped me in my new company. It's not new anymore. I've been there for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I work for Splunk, which is a data analytics company. We have SDKs in 6 different languages. So that certainly appeals well to my polyglot nature because I have to work on lots of different languages.
Sure.
Some I like, some I don't. I won't say which ones I don't.
Oh, no, please do. I mean, we're not recording this. Well, we are, but still.
Well, if we didn't have PHP and Ruby, I wouldn't be upset. It's not that I don't like Ruby. I actually do like Ruby. I actually don't like PHP. But, you know, lots of people don't like things like Node. So I'm not going to say, it's bad. It's bad. No. So it helps there. Actually, in the last year, I was doing a lot of, my team was doing a lot of development with C++.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I didn't have to write it.
Yes.
And I have written it back in the day.
Yes,
but I did have to read quite a bit of it. You remember when?
I remember when I used to write C++.
Oh, I thought you remembered when I did.
No.
That was weird, awkward.
No, I meant like when I had to write C++, it was probably some of the most painful experience. I don't like cleaning up after myself, okay? Let's just be honest.
It wasn't that painful for me. What was painful was trying to write Windows applications in C++.
Oh,
C++ itself was not that bad, but I'm certainly not the guru in that area. So it plays out there. I think it also, I like to explore new languages. So recently we did some fun stuff at Splunk where we, the part of Splunk that I own, we built this new thing that makes it really easy for developers to just send data directly from their applications like logs.
I see.
To Splunk over HTTP.
Oh, interesting.
And we actually work with Docker, which is Go.
Yeah.
I actually got to write some Go.
I saw you tweeting about that a little bit. In fact, there was this structural thing about interfaces that you mentioned. I was like, oh,
yeah,
man.
So I want to get with Mads on that.
Yeah.
I would love to see. So one of the things I really like about Go is the support for interfaces.
Uh-huh.
Interfaces in Go are retroactive.
It's like implicitly declared.
You have these members, you implement this interface. And it literally, like, if you had a function that accepted a parameter of that type, you would satisfy it as long as those members are present.
Right.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
And it's something that Go is not the first to do this.
Sure.
Scala also has structural typing. But if you looked at languages like Ruby, they were purely dynamic, but they didn't have a way to type where you could say, okay, it can be any object as long as it has these properties. You do that yourself in code. The nice thing about with Scala and with Go is the fact that these kind of things, and they're not the only ones, is these are enforced actually at compile time.
It will
tell you, this object, no, is not acceptable. Whereas if I was doing something like Ruby, that would be runtime code that would look and see, does this property exist on this object? Kind of like in .NET, you could write a method that accepts a dynamic.
Sure.
And sure, you could write validation code that checks to see if those members are there, but it's not quite as nice.
Right.
So I think the advantage of this is, A, I think looking at other languages does change the way you code. Like the way I wrote Node code, I was into Node for like, so now I've been doing Node.js development for probably 5 years,
mm-hmm.
Really has impacted the way I want to write other code, like .NET code, which is hence where ScriptCS came about,
mm-hmm.
was to try to say, well, can we take this kind of Node-like experience? And when I look at a lot of the stuff that's coming in the new DNX or the new .NET runtime stuff with Core CLR, they're taking a good page out of the Node world and saying, like, how can we write, you know, just lighter weight code. So I think it enhances my overall breadth and experience as a developer looking at other languages. And it also gives you ideas about ways to do, you know, patterns that you would like to see, which sometimes you can address those patterns by implementing it yourself,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes, like in the case of the Go interfaces, you can hopefully convince someone like Mads that this should be in the new open source compiler.
So
maybe you could send a pull request, but that might be a little bit too much work for me.
A lot of work. So as a polyglot programmer, it feels like it's a really good time to do stuff with Microsoft as a polyglot. I mean, when it comes
it's been that way for a while.
Oh, tell me about that.
I left Microsoft 2 years ago, and I joined the Azure team a couple of years before that. Why? To help get Node.js development working in Azure. But then in the process of doing that, we created command line tools in Node, the Azure CLI, which then enabled, if you were a Python developer and you wanted to deploy a Python app or a PHP app, or now there's Java. So totally agree. I think it's been there for a while, but it's getting better.
Especially
with things like Visual Studio Code, which are now like IDEs that are embracing. I think there's a lot of goodness that is happening in the polyglot world, or for polyglots in the Microsoft world, particularly in Azure.
So now to ask you a question, and just out of my curiosity, do you see systems developed, like for example, that has a Node backend and some other kind of front end and some other kind of services written in C#? Are those kind of heterogeneous applications being written today?
I think the microservices world is pushing that.
I see.
Use the right tool for the job.
Sure.
You know, in the microservices world, and a lot of this, I think, has been inspired by domain-driven design.
All right.
Because in domain-driven design, you have this concept of aggregate, you know, you have your aggregates and you have these bounded contexts,
mm-hmm.
right? Clear separation of contexts where whatever's within could be in any kind of implementation.
Right.
And, I mean, that is, and you could argue when you say, oh, that's what the microservices world is about. You're like, yeah, we heard that somewhere else.
Yeah.
SOA.
Yeah.
But microservices is really, I think, bringing that to fruition. So
and
I do think we're seeing that. I don't see a lot of that, but I do see some of it. I see hybrids, for example, where, you know, I have a friend who works at a very big company where they have Node and they have .NET, and they're doing some interesting things. And even libraries like Edge.js, which allows you to basically invoke .NET code right from a Node application. I've absolutely seen places where it's like, hey, we want to do this thing. It's available in .NET. Either JavaScript is not a good use for this,
mm-hmm.
or there's just nothing that exists, or both.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we just leverage what we have? So I do see a lot of interesting things happening there.
That's awesome. So let's transition over a little bit. You're starting kind of a new podcast with Mr. Miller,
which has nothing to do with what we're talking about now.
No, but I mean, it kind of does too, because
it's
about APIs.
Well, it has to do with the language of the web.
Yeah, it's APIs, right?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that, and then maybe I'll ask some follow-up questions about APIs in general.
Fair enough. So Daryl Miller and I have started a new. It's not a podcast yet because we've not published the podcast files.
Sure.
It is currently a Google Hangout,
mm-hmm.
And it is called In the Mood for HTTP. right?
Which we should all be in.
Exactly. In the mood for HTTP. And actually, I did a blog post that said, are you in the mood for HTTP? And this is, so there's this platform, let's pause.
Yeah.
There's this new online service called Brown Bag Conf.
Got it.
And what Brown Bag Conf allows you to do is submit an idea for something that you'd like to host a session on. Mm-hmm. And it's Danielle Marbatch is the guy who is maintaining this, and it builds on top of this other platform called Crowdcast.
Okay.
And so what we decided to do within the mood for HTTP is we've created, it's kind of a show, and it is a Q&A style format. So there's lots of interesting questions people have about how to build APIs around HTTP. This is a thing that Dowell and I have cared a lot about. Mm-hmm. We're doing a bunch of work in the space of building HTTP APIs for or web APIs for a while.
Okay.
And so we literally just get a stack rank of questions. People vote on them. And, you know, it's Dowell and I pontificating. We don't always agree. And we just talk about these topics. And, you know, the funny thing, like, we get a stack rank of questions. Sometimes you only get through three in a show because the answers
are so lengthy.
Sometimes are pretty lengthy, but we go back and forth. People have said they like it, so we keep doing it. Our last show was fabulous because we had Henrik Nielsen. We were here on campus.
Wow.
So, you know, Henrik kind of did something you might have heard of, HTTP. He was somewhat, a little bit, he's very humble. He's very humble. And he will say, you know, I was just one guy, there was Tim Berners-Lee and all that. As far as I'm concerned, if you were in that original group of people, you're like, you are pretty special.
If you could say, there was other guys, I mean, Tim Berners-Lee was there too. It's like, come on. I mean, you might as well have been with Santa Claus in the North Pole. It's the same thing,
right?
Man.
Santa was there, the elves were there.
I mean, there was a unicorn and there were rainbows, but I was just one guy there.
The awesome thing about Henrik is how humble he is. Yeah. And he is extremely humble, right? We're just like, sure. But it was really fun, you know? And it's like, we're having this conversation about some really interesting topics. I think one of the things that's really cool is that we felt like this is filling a gap.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of really interesting questions people will ask.
Sure.
Anything is on the, is possible, right? So people will ask questions about content negotiation. A lot of people don't understand what that is, and they may want to ask about what is that, and we'll use our knowledge to go into that. Daryl particularly has more knowledge of the HTTP spec, so we can rely on that and pull back
to
that.
Is he one of those people that like reads the spec every night
bed? I don't know if he does it every night, but he's done it a few times.
Every other night.
I've done it a few times, but his retention is definitely better. So we refer back to the spec, and we talk about, you know, we try not to get dogmatic. Uh-huh. It's a big thing on the show is like, We'll share our thoughts. We have been very careful about saying, like, this is the one right way, unless it is written in black in the spec, right? Like, if it is a must in the spec, there's no interpreting that, right? You must not do this. Like, well, what did you mean by that exactly?
Is there a lot of that in the spec?
There is.
Well, that's good,
there's
right?
There's must, there's may, you know, there's different, there's should.
It feels like all of a sudden we have to become attorneys, you know, to be able to read specs and implement
real,
it.
And there's real implications. Like, must or must not is very black and white, right?
Yeah.
It's no, like, well, it kind of depends what day of the week it is. Whereas, you know, should is like, it would be good for you to do this, but there are reasons why you may not do it. It's not as black and white.
So here's
the
question.
So anyway, these are the kind of things we'll talk about. And they're loaded. You get loaded questions. Actually, if you go on Henrik's, you know, he talked about Stump the Chump. There was one or two questions that were no fine answer, and they're just like, you know, see what response you can come up with.
Yeah.
But I think what is really cool is that people are getting more and more interested in building APIs, and that's why we thought it was a good time. And, you know, this is not tied to any framework. It's not tied to ASP.NET.
Right.
It's just general, like, how do I, you know, what's the right, not what's the right way, but how can I address this problem?
Or what's a way to think about
what's
these
things? What's a way to think about it? Yeah, I'm just going to say, I won't say right. And it goes off a lot of our experiences, and we don't always, agree. We don't always disagree either. Kind of gets boring when we don't disagree.
Where are the fireworks? Not on this episode, apparently.
Exactly. So if you search for Brown Bag Conf, You'll find, or you can just search for In the Mood for HTTP, and you will definitely come across. And we're sharing all of these things. They're all done live on Google Hangouts. People can't call in, but they can type. You know, they can type if they have suggestions. And we really encourage people just show up at the time and, you know, just add a question. Like, we try to get people to add ahead of time, but it's not a requirement.
Right.
And it's been fun. You know, the nice thing about Hangouts, for good or worse, for good or bad, is as soon as it's over, it's live.
I see.
You know, and you can watch the videos. We're planning to also make them into, take the MP3s and turn it into a podcast.
Fantastic.
And Dowell recently started working with Microsoft. He's working with, you know, Azure API Management. So, you know, he's got some good context there. And we have had some questions about, you know, API. Are there any API management tools you would recommend? And of course, Daryl has at least one.
His opinion.
That he can throw in there.
So just to finish up.
I think we both tried to be pretty non-biased. Tried to be. As much as we can.
You know what? I don't think anyone can be completely unbiased. Let's be honest.
I said we've tried. Okay. Yes, you have your biases. Your biases make you who you are.
Yeah, and that's okay.
Yeah.
So just to finish up.
Maybe dogmatic is the right word.
Do you think, like, a developer to truly understand sort of how to build really truly HTTP based APIs, should we look at the spec? Should we read it? Is there like certain? Could there be a digestible form?
It's dry. I mean,
it has to be, right?
So one of the things I would recommend if you don't want to go all the way through the spec is if you look in our book for designing evolvable web APIs with ASP.NET.
It's in my shelf.
There's a chapter in that book that is really an abridged form of the HTTP spec.
I see.
It has enough basics that you can kind of. And I literally went through the spec over a period of like a month trying to summarize, which was not easy.
Right.
Summarize the HTTP spec to give it like, okay, here's the basics that you need to know without all the details. So that's a shameless plug that I would recommend. That's even available free online
through
O'Reilly.
Well, I have the book. It's great. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us, bud.
Sure.
Hopefully we'll hear a lot more from you when it comes to your podcast. And when also make sure, what should they search for in order to get this?
In the Mood for HTTP.
That's what it is. In the Mood for HTTP. Thanks for being with us, bud. Thanks for watching again.
You can also go to my blog or Daryl's blog. Daryl's blog is BizCoder. And mine is codebetter.com/Glenn Block.
Fantastic. And I couldn't think of two better people to talk about APIs. And I'm glad there's room for disagreement, because I think sometimes there's something to be learned there.
Totally.
Well, thanks so much for being with us. We're here in Building 33, MVP Summit 2015. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. Take care.